Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today we turn our focus back to fixed income and break down for you how you should be positioned within the asset class amid the current macro and policy backdrop and with Election Day just a couple of weeks away. So joining me here on the line for the conversation this morning, pleased to welcome back Leslie Falconio. Leslie is a senior fixed income strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Leslie, good morning to you. Welcome back to the Top of the Morning podcast and looking forward to our conversation today.
Thank you, Dan.
So, Leslie, perhaps we can begin with the election, as I mentioned, just a couple of weeks away, a highly anticipated event. And I know a contested election outcome scenario that's been talked about as an event that may trigger volatility in the markets. From your vantage point, Leslie, do you believe such a scenario is already priced into markets? And should that outcome materialize, how might interest rates respond?
Well, I mean, we do think it's priced in, and I think you could see this with the options market. I mean, one of the things that we've noted, you know, in previous blogs and writings in regards to, you know, both interest rate volatility and volatility for fixed income risk assets, is that if you look out, you know, this goes back a month ago, but if you looked out, say, a month or two over the election, you'd see the spike in volatility. And granted, it's coming from a very low base because we hit these historical lows overall. And as we've mentioned, September, you know, interest rates barely moved. But we do think this is priced in. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not going to get a market reaction. We just don't think it's going to be sustained. So, you know, you never know really what's going to, the outcome of the election is going to be. And, you know, even though there might be consensus in play within the marketplace, we just don't know. And, you know, so with that said, we're not saying that interest rates can't move, they can. But if hypothetically there is sort of this knee-jerk reaction where interest rates decline, we just don't feel it's going to be sustained. Because in the bigger picture, it's about the monetary and fiscal stimulus. It's about the growth of the economy, and it's about the fundamentals going forward. And either candidate, you know, and both candidates really aren't that concerned about the deficit, if you will, and they're willing to let the deficit go higher, you know, just to increase jobs. So with that said, you might have a knee-jerk reaction down, probably won't be sustained.
So, Leslie, if we take a look at the Chief Investment Office's year-end target for interest rates, we're looking at a 0.8 to 1%, that level. What factors, Leslie, support that?
Well, I mean, one of the things we're looking at as well, and listen, you have things such as, you know, what happened overnight. I mean, when you have this sort of fear-based or concerns over a resurgence in COVID, like we're seeing over in Europe, and possible curfews and, you know, parts of the economy somewhat shutting down, you're going to have this fear-based sort of reaction where yields can decline. But overall, I mean, again, we're looking for the economy to continue to grow, albeit at a slower pace than what we saw in the past few months, given the fact that we are coming from such a very low base. But, you know, we are looking for the economy to recover. We are looking for, you know, a vaccine in, you know, the second half of 2021. And all of these expectations outside of just a large deficit and the strength of the equity and risk assets should lead interest rates to rise. Now, we're really looking for, you know, our top for, you know, the end of 2020 is really just what we saw in June in 10-year yields. So I'd like to bet around the 95, 96 basis points, which is higher from here, but it's not this catalyst jump of, you know, interest rates rising. We do think it's going to be a gradual rise. You've got to get over some of the volatility with the election. But other than that, the market's going to focus back on the fundamentals. It's going to look forward into 2021, and you'll see yields rise by the end of the year.
Leslie, maybe we can spend a few moments touching on positioning within the asset class. I know the Chief Investment Office has been talking about Treasury Inflated Protective Securities, or TIPS. Given the Fed's recent policy commitment, if we backtrack a bit and recollect that, and then coupled with the trend we're seeing in interest rates, their rise, how should TIPS perform against that backdrop?
Yeah, I mean, listen, what we call the inflation risk premium, meaning how investors should be compensated for inflation risk, has actually been rising. And again, you know, this is from the low base that we saw in March from the shutdown and the commodity price war. But the inflation risk premiums have been rising. So investors should start to get compensated for, you know, potential inflation risk. Now, when we say inflation risk, we're not talking about this hyperinflation scenario where we're going to see a 3% CPI in the first quarter of 2021. But you do have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, prices will begin to rise, and as the economy sort of recovers, inflation expectations, most importantly, will begin to rise. And historically, when nominal yields rise, the break-even inflation expectations rise, right? Because nominal yields rise based on growth and increasing growth, increasing inflation expectations, so therefore break-evens rise. What we've seen this year is that we've seen break-evens rise, but the cap on U.S. interest rates because of the amount of QE that the Fed has deployed. So with that said, you've had this breakdown in the correlation of the change of nominal yields and the rise in the break-evens. Our view is over time, this correlation comes back, and as yields rise, the break-evens will go higher, and therefore it's better to own a tip than a nominal treasury. And for our multi-asset that we use, you know, equity and fixed income, you know, we're of the ilk that, you know, for those that want to hedge out either equity risk or even a, you know, embedded credit risk within fixed income, you should do it, you know, more on the safe haven side with things like tips versus, say, a long investment grade corporate. You know, you shouldn't hedge out equity volatility with credit. You should hedge out with, you know, a AAA government guaranteed asset class. With this, from our perspective right now, is better on the tip side than it is on a nominal treasury.
So, Leslie, this might be a good place to point out that we're making reference to the most recent fixed income strategist publication, which you run lead on, the title of which is The Final Countdown, very apropos given that we're heading into Election Day. But within the piece, the chief investment office reinforces its case for investment-grade corporates and senior loans as plays to enhance yield in this current environment. What can you share with us there?
Well, one of our positioning, and listen, investment grade corporates is the up in quality allocation. It's got the backstop of the Fed, but where you're positioned within the investment grade corporate maturity spectrum is also very important. I think as we witnessed just the past, you know, few days and the past weeks in September is that those long end corporates that most people love to allocate to because obviously they're better yielding than the short end have actually underperformed. And again, as we anticipate growth and inflation to progressively get better into the end of the year, into the first half of, you know, 2021, those long end sectors are not going to be the best performers. We prefer mostly the short end, that 1 to 3, 1 to 5 year in investment grade corporates that gives you, listen, it's not a knock to cover off the vol type of yield, right? Because interest rates are where they are, but it is much better than what you're seeing in nominals. And more importantly, because it has lower interest rate exposure, as rates rise, you won't get too much of a hit. And, you know, thirdly, you know, that sector, that area of the, you know, the curve has a lot of financials in that. As we know, you know, the financials, particularly the equity market, has not been the best performing this year. We like the fact that the Fed is buying that part of the yield curve within, you know, their program. So one of the things that we like about that area is that you could earn some incremental yield up in quality without taking on a lot of interest rate risk. However, because that yield is so low, given where it's positioned on the curve, the best strategy is to try and enhance that yield through taking a bit more credit risk. And one of those sectors are in the senior loans. You know, senior loans, as we know, they're floating rate, but they actually have a yield and a spread that is equal to or even better than high yield, and you're a secured asset. So having that ability to have this sort of, you know, yield enhancer without taking on too much interest rate risk, we really find attractive because, one, we think interest rates gradually rise, and which will shift the inflow back into floating rate product. And also, two, as we all are well aware, the Fed is already pretty much at the zero lower bound, and we don't think they're going to deploy a negative interest rate policy. So all of that sort of, you know, negative impact of declining euro dollar, declining LIBOR, that you feel from floating rate assets has already been priced into the marketplace. So we think that senior loan strategy is very good to protect yourself against potential rising rates going forward. And the fact that it's secured, right, it has a much better recovery and default rate.
Thank you, Leslie. And then maybe as a final point within the piece, I noticed that the Chief Investment Office maintains a neutral view on MBS, CMBS. Curious as to what needs to materialize in order for that view to be revisited. And I suppose the headlines that we're seeing this morning that Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and House Speaker Pelosi are still far apart on additional stimulus, that's not really helping matters on this front.
Well, I think that to that point, that affects more on the CMBS side, but I'll get to that in a minute. I mean, one of the things in the mortgage-backed security side is that, listen, MBS, since the wide that we saw in March, has really been in this very tight spread range. And it's been in a tight spread range because, as we know, the Fed is buying about $40 billion a month. However, with that said, listen, as we have a mortgage rate that fell to a 50-year low, and as such, the supply coming into the marketplace is fairly ample, even with the Fed buying. So the reason why that we're a little bit neutral on mortgage-backed securities is not because we think they're incrementally rich, because they're not, you know, but one of the things that we're cautious about is the fact that we have a lot of supply coming into the market. You know, we're at levels in terms of first-time coupons being issued, like a 1.5 in you know, agency MBS that we've never seen. And as we shift, and if volatility should spike, then on the MBS side, you know, you do have this type of duration drift. So it's not like we dislike the asset class. We're just going to see more neutral on it because it really is married to interest rates, and we do have a lot of supply coming into the marketplace because of the low mortgage rate, because of the high refi levels that the consumer, you know, which is beneficial, you know, has been able to take advantage of. You know, on the CMBS side, you know, listen, the CMBS side, unfortunately, has been somewhat on the private label or what we call the non-agency. We think there's huge opportunity there in the sense that it's very cheap to high yield. But there's still these pockets of vulnerability within CMBS that unfortunately is clouding the entire sector. And those pockets of vulnerability, as we know, could be retail, lodging, hospitality, all these kinds of things that have really been impacted by this service sector depression that we've seen because of COVID. That has just, it's not that the spreads haven't come in, because they have, but they've greatly lagged other credit type sectors. They don't have the same support by the Fed. So that's why on the non-agency side, you still remain a bit neutral, although they are technically cheap. Now, for those that are willing to give up a little bit of liquidity, have a longer horizon, you know, there's funds and things like that on the alternative investment platform that are great in terms of the private side that are, I think, will be, you know, fantastic for the longer term. But, you know, right now there's still these pockets of vulnerability. Now, on the agency side, you know, that's the multifamily housing side, which has actually done, you know, well. It's still cheap to the corporates, you know, and we like that side. For those that want to get involved on the CMBS side, at least until the end of the year, they may want to keep their powder dry a bit. You know, the agency CMBS side is one of those places that you could allocate to. But overall, we're really remaining a bit neutral on those two sectors right now, because there's a lot of unknowns that we need to see before there's a bit of comfort with that. And you know, let's get through the winter in New York City. Let's see what happens in terms of not only a fiscal stimulus, but also a vaccine heading into the first quarter. But opportunistically, there's no question that the CMBS sector is cheap.
Leslie, great catching up with you on the podcast this morning, and thank you for walking us through your interest rate outlook, potential market implications as a result of the upcoming election, and for how to be positioned within fixed income at this time. So great catching up as always, Leslie, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks so much.
And again, today we have been joined by Leslie Falconio, Senior Fixed Income Strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. So before we close out, as always, I do want to point out that there are many publications and blogs available now for you up on UBS Online Services. That does include the latest edition of the Fixed Income Strategist publication. This is a monthly piece which Leslie runs lead on. The title for this edition is The Final Countdown. So for UBS clients, please be sure to reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of that publication directly. Though, as I mentioned, the publication can also now be located up on UBS Online Services. Top of the Morning, we'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.